From the City of Angels off the Pacific Ocean, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation around the world. I'm George Norrie. Welcome to Coast AM. Next hour, investigative reporter Linda Moulton Howe joins us for a complete program, Mysteries of the World. Then the last hour, conversations with Linda. You get an opportunity to chat with her. A couple of program notes for you. George Knapp will be filling in for me tomorrow night, and I will be here for you live on Labor Day night, Monday night. And also a little note, Halloween Friday, October 31st, I'll be doing my very first ghost-to-ghost show. Staff is working on some very fascinating, scary things for you. Friday night, Halloween. Does it get any better? With Gustav approaching hurricane strength and showing no signs of veering off a track to slam into the Gulf Coast, authorities across the region now began laying the groundwork to get the sick, elderly, and poor away from the shoreline. The first batch of 700 buses that could ferry residents inland were being sent to a staging area near New Orleans, and officials in Mississippi were trying to decide when to move Katrina-battered residents along the coast who were still living in temporary homes, including trailers vulnerable to high wind. The preliminary planning for a potential evacuation is part of a massive outline drafted after Hurricane Katrina slammed ashore 3 years ago, flooding 80% of New Orleans and stranding thousands who couldn't get out in time. As the region prepared to mark the storm's anniversary on Friday, officials said they were confident these blueprints made them ready for Gustav. The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention says that the Salmonella outbreak that sickened about 1,400 people across the country appears now to be over. The number of reported cases has been dropping since early July. Initial results from a CDC and Food and Drug Administration investigation found that jalapeno peppers appeared to be a major carrier of the bacteria, as were serrano peppers. Tomatoes identified early in the outbreak as the culprit were still a possible source, they say. Bayer Crop Science is facing scrutiny because of the effect of one of its best-selling pesticides has had on honeybees. A German prosecutor is investigating Bayer's chairman and the head of Bayer Crop Science after critics alleged that they knowingly polluted the environment. The investigation was triggered by an August 13th complaint filed by German beekeepers and consumer protection advocates against the Bayer company. The complaint is part of efforts by groups on both sides of the Atlantic to determine how much Bayer Crop Science knows about the part of the pesticide that may have played a role in the death of millions of honeybees. Next hour, that will be one of the stories that Linda Moulton Howe will cover for us. Barack Obama appeared on stage tonight to accept his nomination as the Democratic presidential candidate. Sending 75 to 85,000 strong, the crowd went wild. Obama formally accepted the Democratic Party's White House nomination with profound gratitude and great humility. And also John McCain, the expected Republican nominee, has selected his running mate and will hold a rally with that person Friday at noon in Dayton, Ohio. Russian Prime Minister Vladimir Putin has suggested that the United States push Georgia toward war and said he suspects a connection to the American presidential campaign. Russian news agencies reported that he said that the U.S. seemingly encouraged Georgia to use force to resolve its dispute. He did not name a party or candidate, but he did say that he suspected that someone in the U.S. provoked the conflict to give one of the candidates an edge in the U.S. presidential election. That two-headed baby born in Bangladesh on Monday has died after the parents took him home because they could not afford medical care. The boy named Kyron was born by cesarean section at a clinic. He died today, weighed 12 pounds, 1 ounce. A feature story at coasttocoastam.com if you want to take a look at it. A depiction of frogs in a modern art sculpture has been condemned by Pope Benedict XVI as blasphemous. The four-foot wooden artwork in question is a crucified green frog holding a beer mug in one hand and an egg in the other. The complete story, coasttocoastam.com. A nearly fatal bite by a poisonous snake led to the arrest of a man for keeping 51 deadly cobras and mambas in his Tokyo apartment without permission. The collection was discovered when he called for an ambulance after being bitten on a finger by one of his snakes. Hot stories at coasttocoastam.com. Giant clams, 2 feet long, might have helped feed prehistoric humans as they first migrated out of Africa, according to new research. It's there as a hot story. I guess that makes this a huge clam bake, does it not? Although there's debate over the exact date it started, on November 2nd, around 2000, a person calling themselves Time Travel Zero and later John Teeter started posting that he was a time traveler from the year 2036. One of the first things he did was post pictures of his time machine in his operations manual. As the weeks went by, more and more people began questioning him about why he was here, the physics of time travel, his thoughts about our time, about the future. In his post, John Teeter entertained, angered, frightened, and even belittled those who engaged him in conversation. On the line with us now, Larry Haber. Larry's an attorney who has represented the family of time traveler John Teeter. You might remember about a year and a half, 2 years ago, we interviewed Larry Haber. He's back for a quick update here, and hopefully will stay with us for the rest of the hour. Larry, how are you?
I'm very good this evening. Thank you.
Good. Are you still representing the family, Larry?
Yes, I am.
Okay. Now, I know when I talked to you some time ago, you hadn't met them. We did have the mother on. She was on via you. I would ask you a question, then you asked her, and she came on. Have you met them since, Larry?
No, I have not. Everything has been kept pretty much at arm's length and some telephone calls, mostly email.
Have they paid their legal fees?
Yes, I'm current. Thank you.
Okay. What do they want with you, Larry? What does the John Teeter family want?
They, quite frankly, they just need some help when they call me from certain areas. They've got a movie I don't know anything about, quite frankly, but once in a while I'll get an email or a call regarding some clearances. Is this okay to use? Is this not? Do we need permission? And we've also had a couple of books. Deals in Japan, and so I've had to look at those contracts. So it's just basic legal work of the type of stuff that I do normally.
Larry, are you convinced that John Teeter, whoever he may be, was indeed a time traveler?
I don't know.
I'm
like a lot of people thinking, I hope this is real because I think it's cool, and I'm a big science fan and science fiction fan and so on, but everybody asks, Do you believe this? My answer always is, I take things at face value. I do my work and so on. So I've never even had the opportunity to try to independently evaluate it or verify it.
And somewhere with the family is the actual smaller version of the adult John Teeter. Little John Teeter is around somewhere.
Apparently so. I mean, that's the hard part for anybody that gets into time travel, the whole paradox thing. You know, your parents and the kids and so on and so forth at the same time. Yeah, I've never had any contact through the younger John Teeter, so whatsoever.
Continues to be a remarkable story. Well, that's Larry Haber, the attorney for the John Teeter family. There's an actual family out there, and they belong to John Teeter. Now, was John Teeter the time traveler or not? Was it a great joke? We don't know. In a moment, Oliver Williams joins us. He's the webmaster for johnteeter.com. He's next on Coast to Coast AM. Well, this is still one of the most perplexing stories I've ever come across, the John Teeter story. Oliver Williams is the website editor for the time travel story of John Teeter. He first saw John Teeter's internet postings in the fall of 2002. And after reading many of them, the sites where John was discussed, Oliver gathered the posts that John left online, edited them into a single website, johnteeter.com. The website also contains email and news events that point the subjects that John spoke about. Time for Oliver to come back for an update, and here he is. Oliver, how have you been?
Hey, I've been pretty good, George. How are you been?
Good. Not bad at all. For those who do not know who John Teeter was or is, give us a little synopsis.
Absolutely. Back in November of 2000, somebody went online claiming to be John Teeter, and as you said, they called themselves Time Travel Zero, and they were on various science and time travel forums where people were talking about time travel, and he claimed to be a time traveler from the year 2036. For a long time, nobody really paid too much attention to it. It didn't really get that much attention. And as he went on for the next 3 months, he made what a lot of people think were a series of predictions and statements about what was going to happen in the future, or trends to look for, things that were going to happen. And as time went on, a lot of people believed that they started coming true. So later now, it was almost about 3 years after that when I first discovered it from a friend, and I stayed up all night reading once through everything that was said, and it was just absolutely amazing to me. And I gathered everything in one place and put it on a single website, and that's sort of how this all started picking up steam. So now I'm getting thousands of emails and questions about, you know, John, what he said, what's going on. We try to put relevant news on our site, and that's pretty much where we are now.
As bizarre as the story is, Oliver, and we both know it's strange, there's that piece of me that says it's possible. And I think that's what keeps you going too, isn't it?
Absolutely. In fact, I thought of a perfect analogy, George, for, you know, in fact, somebody sent this to me. You know, as you know, the Olympics went off without a hitch, or at least they weren't canceled, which is one of the things John said would happen.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm getting a lot of email, and basically one person put it this way. They said, let's pretend you go to a magician, and they're blindfolded in another room, and the trick is you shuffle a deck of cards and you put them out on the table. And as you turn them over randomly, the magician in the other room is going to tell you what they are. So maybe for the first 10, he gets it right on the nose. But then he gets two wrong. Then he gets another 10 right. And then he gets another one wrong. But when you look at all the ones that he got right versus the ones he got wrong, do you say he's a bad magician, or do you say that he made a mistake, or that it didn't work out the way he wanted to? And I think that's kind of where a lot of people are now, is that his percentage is very high, but to a lot of people, it looks like he made some mistakes.
One can assume, though, that if there were obvious mistakes made by John Teeter, then something changed these events. Something changed these events where what he saw, what he perceived, were different from what we see and we perceive, almost as if there's two parallel universes involved here.
Well, absolutely. In fact, that was kind of the gist of, I think, where people are understanding this now, is if time travel works the way John explained it, then the fact that he was here was different, and everything after that point would have been different. So when he was talking about, you know, the Olympics not happening, he was talking about his future or the period he lived in. You know, and, you know, the other example was, if a time traveler, George, told you that you're going to get hit by a bus tonight when you walked outside, would you do it?
I'm not walking outside.
Exactly. So if you don't walk outside, then everything that happens after that is going to be different.
That's true. Now, was he specific in terms of the year of the Olympics? How do we know it's not a future Olympics?
Well, he said in fact, a lot of people thought he was talking about the 2004 Olympics. He said everything after the Olympics after 2004 would be canceled. And when you look at it, what happened, I think a lot of people, and I did, I thought we came pretty darn close to having them canceled. So with all the conflict and the protests and the pollution and the athletes, and, you know, for a while there, I was thinking it might actually happen. So even if it didn't happen, I think a lot of people would admit they thought it could have happened.
This picture of his time machine in the operations manual, did Teeter ever say that he was going to get more information about that, or did he just leave that out there?
He put that out there. That was one of the first things that he did. And again, you're talking about that schematic that looks like
right.
The interesting thing about that, and it's still happening today, is, you know, 2 years ago, the Anomaly site put out a standing reward for anybody who could identify what that was. And there have been lots of people that have come forward and said, oh, I know exactly what that was. That's a radio set in the Army or a radiation detector. But nobody has ever come forward with any type of proof or drawing or duplicate or anything to show that what it was. It's obviously some sort of a machine. So John claims that was his time machine. And, George, I think what John was trying to do was get that information out. And I think everything that he was trying to do, everything he was saying, there was some meaning behind it where he was trying to get that information out to the public.
Talked a little bit last night on the program about John Teeter. What if he wasn't a time traveler, Oliver, but someone from our time period, but he was a remote viewer and he had the ability to go into the future and he looked at it that way. So technically, he wasn't the kind of time traveler we think about when you think about the H.G. Wells time machine. But maybe he was, in terms of remote viewing and other ways to do this.
Well, let's see. If that were true, and I understand that phenomenon, wouldn't his accuracy have been better since he was looking at our future? He was looking at his own future. And then again, even if that were true, it still sort of tells me that he had some other meaning. There was some piece of information he wanted to get out there, and he went through all this elaboration to do that.
Well, what did he say? And we're going to go through a couple topics. We'll have phone calls with you when we make the turn here at the half hour. What did he say about Civil War?
He talked about a conflict that would start in 2004 and develop through 2005, and he gave us some mile markers to look for. But interestingly enough, he said the shooting would start in 2008. If you go back and look at the posts, it's easy to surmise that he's talking about a shooting war here in the United States. But if you look at the site, we updated this today, a lot of people are sending emails saying what's going on in Russia looks a lot like what John might have been talking about.
Interesting.
And, you know, there are lots of predictions or things he said about Russia's relationship with China and us. And a lot of people are saying, hey, this is the flare-up John might have been talking about.
He singled out mad cow disease. How come?
John's future, the way that he described it, was not very pleasant. He said that was a big problem in the future, was that mad cow was a horrible problem because it takes such a long period of time to gestate, and it went undiagnosed because it was unrecognized. Or, you know, I've seen stories now that you know, correct me if I'm wrong, but they think that there might be some Alzheimer's cases that are actually mad cow. So if that's true, and we're not doing anything about it, and it's still in the meat, and it's still out there, and you see these stories pop up every time, according to John, in a 30 to 40-year period, it's a huge problem in the future. And I mean big. I mean enough that it's affecting a lot of people. So he talked about that at great length.
One of the reasons he came back to this time period is he needed parts from a 5100 IBM computer, right?
Yeah, his mission, you know, he didn't come here just to speak to us on the Internet. According to him, his mission was to go back to 1975 and get a portable computer that was manufactured by IBM. And this was about the time, as a matter of fact, that he stated that there were some specific things about that computer that were unpublished, which he stated on the Internet while he was here. And it was after he left that IBM engineers that had worked on the machine came forward and said, yeah, he's absolutely right, and there's only a handful of people that would have known that. So he claims they needed that computer in the future as a tool to fix something or a problem that they had in the year 2036.
And what did he say about catastrophes, future catastrophes?
Well, that's one thing he refused to talk about. He had three basic rules, and one of them was he was not going to talk about
sports.
He wasn't going to talk about anything that you could make money with.
Right.
Anything that would put somebody's life in danger, like who is the president, or what happened to Bill Gates. He would not tell us that. He wouldn't tell us anything about natural disasters, earthquakes, volcanoes, and he called it death by probability. He didn't want to give any information to anybody that would allow them to avoid that. So those were his three rules. And, you know, if you think about it, and I've seen email on this too, an earthquake, a tornado, or something like that would be pretty consistent across world lines. I mean, it would be very difficult for humans to affect the Earth in such a way that an earthquake wouldn't happen at the same time that it would in another world line.
He was somewhat argumentative, somewhat belittling of those that he didn't get along with when he was posting. How come?
Deep down, I think John harbored a lot of anger toward us. He felt at times that we were ignorant, that we were easily led, that we didn't understand a lot of the advantages we had, and that basically we weren't that bright when it came to voting and the Constitution. And he blamed us for the war, for the nuclear war he said is coming in 2015.
Fascinating. Did he talk about 2012, that very strange year?
You know, it did come up, and he said, I'm not going to talk about it, but it's not the end of the world. And that was where he left it.
Well, that's a good thing. Oliver, we're going to keep you for phone calls when we come back. The website, John Titor, TITOR.com. How often do you update it?
You know, George, I got to be honest. I'm sort of like everybody else. You know, if nothing's going on, I'll watch and I'll watch, and we don't update it for a while. And then something will happen. I'll get it up there as fast as I can. But I would say it's maybe twice a month we update.
Okay, and it's not your full-time occupation, right?
Correct. Yeah, it's slowly taking more of my time, but correct, it's not my full-time occupation.
Oliver Williams, we'll take your phone calls with him when we come back on Coast to Coast AM. Next hour, investigative reporter Linda Moulton Howe joins us. We're going to talk about the honeybee disappearance, why one-third of the world's amphibians could be on the brink of extinction, and also some incredible UFO stories. But when we come back, it's Oliver Williams and more with you on the John Teeter Time Traveler story on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, Oliver Williams with us. We're going to take your phone calls as well. Do you think John Teeter will ever return, Oliver?
I don't think, if he returns, I don't think it's going to be the John that was here before. I think it might be a different John, but no, according to John, the exact same John will never be here again. And, you know, interestingly, Ronald Mallett says the same thing.
That's true. That is absolutely true. What a great guy he is, huh? To the phones we go. Let's go to Minnesota. Seth, you're on the air with us. Go ahead, Seth.
Hey, George, Oliver, how's it going?
Good.
Good. So I can't say I'm extremely well-read on John's story, but I was wondering if he's led to, like, any date at all where we might make contact with extraterrestrials.
John talked about UFOs only one time, and he said that in the future the theory is, or his personal belief, is that it's not aliens, it's humans with much more advanced dimensional or time travel machines.
Okay, you there, Seth?
Yep, sure am.
Okay, any follow-up? Give you a chance here.
That's really interesting, I guess. I wish I had something else to add, but I don't.
Okay, all right. He was in awe of you, Oliver, as so many are. Julie in Salem, Oregon, west of the Rockies. Hey, Julie, welcome to the program.
Well, thank you. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Hey, I think the civil unrest may yet come to pass. Up in Portland this week, there's been 4 black military helicopters flying around within the city, between the skyscrapers, doing rappels onto roofs and stuff like that. And they don't want anybody watching them. They don't want anybody knowing what's going on.
What do you think is going on?
I don't know. I think they're gearing up to do something. I don't know.
You know, I'm torn on that subject because I have a new feeling about this. You know, John thought that the coming conflict would be good for us, you know, and he tried to explain why. And before, I thought I'd bite the bullet and I'd say, okay, well, maybe he's right and we got to go through this. But now, you know, since the Olympics didn't get canceled, I thought to myself, you know, I'm glad that didn't happen. I hope we don't have those things happen. So right now, I hope we don't have a conflict in this country and that we're smart enough maybe to take what John had said about how to live our lives and maybe avoid all that. So I'm optimistic that that won't happen.
You may be right. Let's go to Pennsylvania. Marie, you're on with Oliver Williams on Coast to Coast. Hi, Marie.
Oh, hey, good morning, guys. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Yeah, I kind of wanted to start out by saying I've got a bridge I'd like to sell you people if you want, if you really fall for this. It really seems like classic Tavistock social manipulation. Various intelligence agencies use.
Maybe.
They try to get large populations to envision the future the agency wants to achieve. And just the statement that you just made, I've heard it before, about you say John feels that a conflict would be good for the human race. You know, that, come on, who else would support that? But I wanted to ask you if you can give me some more examples of what you claim he's, you know, accurately predicted, because the ones that you've, you know, given tonight are kind of a big stretch.
Oh, absolutely. The first thing he said was that CERN was going to make an announcement about expecting to make black holes in their lab, which goes online, I believe, in about a week.
Pretty soon.
He said that almost 10 years ago. And he said the fall of 2001 they would make the announcement. He left in March, and indeed CERN made the announcement, I believe, in September. He made comments about the IBM computer that, according to IBM engineers, only a few people knew about. He talked about a skyscraper that would be missing in New York in a fax to Art Bell in 1998. He made comments about how our Constitution would be torn away from us in a few years. He said there would be no weapons of mass destruction found in Iraq before the first Gulf invasion. He said China would be the next one to put a man in space, which they did. He talked about the space shuttle having numerous problems, which they did. He talked about Mad Cow coming to the U.S., which it did. He said Stephen Hawking would change his mind.
Which he did.
Which he did. And he said viruses would be used to fight cancer, which they are.
All right, there you go. Let's go next to our wild card line. Hey, it's Bill in West Hartford, Connecticut. Hey, Bill.
Hi, John. I mean, George, I'm all right. George, hi. And Oliver,
so you
hi.
Think I was the time traveler, do you, Bill?
No, I'm all right. I was thinking of John Peter. I said, George, Oliver, I have a very optimistic question regarding the, well, I will now say so-called Civil War, because I don't think it'll happen. Let me get right to it. Just one question. Now that the fact that John Peter had said that there would be or possibly would be a woman president, and after tonight officially Barack Obama is the Democratic nominee, my question is, should hopefully Barack Obama be the next president of the United States and unite our country with his policy of unity and change and his charisma of getting the country together? Would that be another thing that will forestall, not in other words, not have the Civil War that we would have had, say, if Hillary Clinton were the nominee and John McCain were to win?
So you're telling me with 100% assuredness that John McCain will not pick a woman vice president?
Oh, I see. Well, I've heard like last thing.
Well, we'll know tomorrow, won't we?
Well, plenty, they said. Plenty will be his vice president.
Until we know tomorrow, I suppose that's still a possibility.
All right, but let's say, for my point of my argument, let's say John McCain does not pick a woman, and it is Barack Obama versus John McCain, and Barack Obama and Joe Biden are the next president and vice president. Would that hopefully mean that we're in the timeline which we will not have the Civil War? We'll start the healing in our country that the last 8 years gave us with Bush and Cheney, if you know what I'm saying.
You know, I hope you're right. However, John talked about a certain amount of momentum in events. You know, he called it divergence. He said that depending on how far off you are from where you started when you used your time machine, that a world line can be different. So what you're asking, I'm assuming, is will our timeline be different enough that that won't happen? And I hope it will be. You know, sometimes like, oh, see, the Civil War didn't happen, so, you know, you're nuts. And I go, you know, I'm glad it didn't happen. So I hope you're right. So if John is wrong about this, I hope he's wrong.
Well, I think he's wrong because Barack Obama will bring our country together.
I hope you're right about that, too.
All right, Bill, thanks. Only time will tell. First-time caller, Andy in New Jersey. Welcome to the show. Go ahead, Andy. Andy, you with us? Nope. He time-traveled himself away. But we do have Eric in Shreveport, Louisiana. Hey, Eric.
Hey.
Good to have
George.
You. Good to have you with us. I hope you're out of the way of Gustav, huh?
Oh yeah. Okay. I hope to catch a little rain here, though.
Just a sprinkling,
hey.
Huh?
Hey, it's great to talk to you.
Sure.
Did you say he traveled back in time in 1975 to get an IBM computer?
Correct. He claims that that's when the computer was released or when it was available. So he went back to, was it Rochester, Minnesota is where he went?
Okay. I was wondering what kind of currency he would use to get one, because weren't they kind of pricey back then?
Well, actually, I don't think he bought it. He apparently, the reason he was chosen for this mission was his grandfather was involved with building it. So, apparently, according to him, he made contact with his grandfather.
The paradox, huh?
Okay. I was just wondering.
You know, now, Oliver, I want to get your reaction to Larry Haber, the attorney, and the fact that he claims that he's representing a family. I believe him. I think he's representing some family that believes that they've got a little baby, John Teeter. Of course, he's not a little baby anymore, but... What do you think?
He's 10. You know, when that first came out, I was skeptical, and I sort of stayed away from all that stuff.
Remember I played the tape for you?
Yes, I remember that.
Okay.
But, you know, when we first heard about that, a lot of people checked him out. Yes, he's a lawyer. Yes, he's where he says he is. Yes, he does what he says he does. The other thing I can say is when that happened, there were a group of people that made his life absolutely miserable. They took pictures of his kids. They told you how to get to his house. They, you know, people were standing outside of his office. So I think that, I don't think he was ready for that. So my guess is he might be a little cagey based on that. But, you know, he is a real attorney. I get stuff all the time. People will email me, you know, that Japanese thing he was talking about. I remember getting that request. I say, look, you got to talk to this guy named Larry Haber. So, you know, obviously he's doing whatever it is he was hired to do.
And the several times I've talked to him, I like the guy.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, he's so disinterested, it's hard to believe that he's lying.
And he claims he's being paid. He's not met the family, but they're out there. I mean, God, I would love to have you meet the family.
Yeah, that would be something. Yeah.
Robert in Sacramento, first-time caller. Go ahead, Robert.
Hey, guys. I was wondering if John mentioned anything about the RFID chip going underneath our skin.
You know, I'm thinking back, and I think that's the first time anyone's ever asked that. And I believe he did, and I think it's one of the things that may have led to or built up to the conflict that he was talking about, you know, that started in the United States.
It's funny that he mentions RFID chips, because today Tom and I had lunch with Catherine Albrecht, who is the champion opposed to these chips being put in us and our clothes and everything else.
Yeah, he was a major advocate for, please, please just read the Constitution and then make your decisions about what's happening to you from that. So I got a feeling that that was even brought up. That definitely would have gone over well.
Let's go west of the Rockies, Fred in Tucson, Arizona. Go ahead, Fred.
How you doing tonight?
I'm doing great. Thanks.
I just wanted to tell you guys I'm a big fan of the show, and I'm glad to be on.
Well, good. Thank you.
And I just had a real quick question for your guest tonight.
Sure.
I was wondering about his opinion. I love the John Titor legacy and everything that was written, but I wanted to know his opinion on an interesting book I read, a 1959 novel by an American writer named Pat Frank, and the book is called The Last Babylon.
Oh, yeah, that early on when The Post came out, a lot of people pointed to that book and said that what John was talking about was pulled right from that book.
Similarities there?
Well, you know, when you look at the book and you read the book, John describes a nuclear conflict, and the book is about a nuclear conflict. So I think it's easy to look at both, you know, both book and what John said and say, yeah, they're both talking about nuclear war, they're both talking about fallout. You know, I see the similarities, but I'm not sure that it's you could say that he pulled right from that book to write what he wrote. I mean, that's my opinion.
So it wasn't a script. Next up, first-time caller line, Kentucky we go. Hey, John, take it away.
Yeah, this is John from Dawson Springs, Kentucky.
Sure thing.
I just had a quick question. I was just wanting to know what the whole situation was around Tier actually needing an attorney to begin with.
Well, it's my understanding that, you know, when John came back, he stayed with his family. He stated that he stayed in the house with the younger version of himself. And when he left, his family, who's still here, apparently got an attorney and I guess is doing something to protect their interests or their identity. We do know that they moved from Florida to
the Midwest.
The Midwest.
Right?
I think it was Nebraska. So, you know, according to John, that didn't happen in his future, but that's where they reside now.
I wonder if the 10-year-old John Titor knows this story. Do you think the family's talked with him about it?
You know, since you bring that up, that is an interesting point, because he's getting to that age where he'll start listening to the radio.
He may stumble across this show, hear
Mom,
you one day,
explaining to do.
And go, God, they're talking about a guy named John Titor, yeah. Just like me, Mom.
Well, you know, it's just, I don't think their last name is Titor.
No, I don't. I think you're right. I think he changed it.
But, yeah, that would be an interesting conversation to have with young John.
Let's go to Phil, Hartford, Connecticut. Welcome to the program. Go ahead, Phil.
Yes, I was just curious. How does John travel in time? Does he have some kind of a tachyon generator, or do they build some kind of force field, or
sure?
Or what is it?
I'll walk you through it as quickly as I can. According to John, all of the math for his machine exists now. Basically, it runs off of two micro singularities or mini black holes, which are in close proximity to each other. They are electrified and they are spinning. And then if you eject electrons onto the surface of these mini black holes, you can alter their, I think it's either their density or their event horizon. And by manipulating the gravity that comes off of them, you can basically not travel in time, but slide between two dimensions that look exactly the same.
just an amazing, amazing story. Truly is. And, you know, when you get Ron Mallett involved in this, because I believe if anybody gets time travel going, it's going to be him.
Well, you know, George, that's sort of what's strange. You know, a couple of years ago, you know, if you were to read the John Titor postings, you go, okay, here's the basics for his physics. And then a couple of years later, there's another scientist named John Kramer and then Ronald Mallett. And they start talking about time travel and black holes, and it's exactly what Titor described. I mean, some of the ideas, you know, Ron Mallett has is that if you travel in time, you can never get back to your starting point. Well, that's exactly what John said.
Does Titor ever mention who invented time travel?
Oh, yeah. Apparently, there's a gentleman named Tipler who came up with, I guess, the mathematics for how the singularities work. You can look that up.
Is there a Tipler out there now?
I don't know. I think he's an English scientist. And again, this is back in 1975. He came up with the theory.
Okay.
How rotating black holes do this. And look it up on the internet. It's right there.
Is he still alive?
I don't know. I have no idea.
That's interesting. I'd love to get him on the show if he is. Let's go to John in Indianapolis, Indiana. Go ahead, John.
Yes, George. I think it would be interesting if you and your guest tonight and last night's guest, Dr. Weiss, could, and I'm sure the family wouldn't agree to it, could meet with this young man. Yeah, I think that would be so neat
and do a future progression on him.
Yes, sir.
Perfect.
Wouldn't that be interesting?
I wonder if the family would let us do that, Oliver.
Yeah, I think that's why they're trying to keep their identity secret.
I think so, too. Now, to date, they haven't made any money on this, right? And this thing's 8 years old now.
Let's see, 1998, so he'd be 10.
No, but I mean, since we knew about Titor in 2000, you know, this story's 8 years old, right?
Correct.
I don't think any money has made it to this family or big bucks or anything. There's a little book out there, but I don't even know if they made the money.
Well, you know, I think a lot of people believe or want to believe that the idea of this was not to make money. It was to get something out there so that it would be available. And I think that's where I'm going to. I mean, I don't think anybody's gotten rich off this, but there are a whole lot of new ideas out there people are talking about now.
It's fascinating. I got to tell you, it's one of the most fascinating stories I've ever heard. I can't tell you how many people out there are interested. There's a chat room, the NighthawkZone.com folks. They love this John Titor story. I mean, they have, for example, I mean, I think they've gathered around a campfire tonight to listen to this and listen to you. I mean, so there is incredible interest in it, Oliver. Why?
You know, I think people are optimistic about the future, and I think time travel is a dream that a lot of people have. And the idea that it's possible, you know, to me, all these things aside, the science, the physics, the way that he talked, the way that he spoke, it seems real. You want to believe it. And I think that's what makes this different, is that we know everything else is science fiction. We're not so sure about this.
If someone starts posting under the name of John Titor, would you be able to find out if the guy was the same fellow from the past?
You know, I could probably make a good guess, but there are people out there that actually interacted with John while he was here, and I'm sure they could tell. In fact, that's happened before. People have come forward and said, I'm him. And then they were eventually debunked.
Did anybody ever capture an IP address or anything like that?
Oh, yeah. I remember looking at the post, and there were people saying, hey, this is your IP address. And he goes, yeah, that's where I am. He didn't try to hide that at all.
Amazing. Amazing. If we're able to get that address again and go down there and find it, I wonder if there's anybody there.
Well, you know, I think actually some people have put some effort into that, and they've done that. You know, of course, they go there, and it's probably an empty room with nothing in it. But, you know, people have done that, George.
That is incredible. Oliver, stay in touch with us, my friend. You're one of the best.
Absolutely, George. Good talking to you.
Oliver Williams' website is johntitor.com. Up next, 3 hours of investigative reporter Linda Moulton Howe. Last hour, conversations with Linda, giving you an opportunity to chat with her. Some of the topics at hand, honeybees, disappearing amphibians, and a couple incredible UFO stories.